Blog Talk Radio.
Cultures and some nations, it's a celebration. Here in an emerging nation, in a developing area of the world, we still have a bit of puzzlement. We're not quite sure what it is, so that's pretty much the curious personality of Canada. So join with me today as we continue on with a celebration of Canadian masonry. And I mean that most sincerely. This is a nation. This is an order which I think is famous for the display of audacity. We don't necessarily champion the win at all cost mentality of our, as the world knows, is the theme of the United States of America. I'll soften that at all cost. Winning is important. This isn't just an American notion. This was there's certain Greek philosophers that embrace this notion, certainly in Sparta, if you think about it historically, with the games, the events that were there, the competition, the people that were raised to be soldiers, that was their function, to defend, not to be domestic, not to labor, but to defend. They trained all their lives. Being first was important. Here in this country, I think we find an interesting relationship that fits so well with the notions of the principles of Freemasonry. This is, where Canada and Freemasonry displays that that audacity. Let's get into this today and enjoy this eve of Labor Day together. Thank you. Let me take you back to the beginning of this idea for masonry here, the topic for Masonic effects today. I think we're on to something that's remarkable, and I want to help add to the conversation about what's going on with Freemasonry. Some of us have received a copy of the magazine Freemasonry from the United Grand Lodge of England and have a chance to flip through it. And one of the things that we enjoy is those indicators of the energy, the vitality of Freemasonry. So it doesn't talk about the ritual. We don't talk about unless that's the topic between us, or we're going to study that. What we talk about is the interface between Freemasonry and the community or communities around us. The wizard in The Wizard of Oz said, we're good deed doers. So we will pull out the good deeds and talk about them with each other. And we really do enjoy, we get a great deal of satisfaction from knowing that groups, because the groups of Masons in different areas around the world organize around an idea. And it's not, I don't think, we don't suffer a lot from ideas that are formed by committees. You know, the horse that was left to be designed by a committee was when God did that, they produced the camel. Well, you know, some great ideas, and we do celebrate it, but it's like putting your finger on the pulse. If you wanted to know how is the environment of masonry, that's where we can find the pulse. Look at what's going on. Is it enough? Is it happening in our own neighborhood? Well, let's get over that kind of, we need to really put some perspective between that question and ourselves, don't we? We need to be able to look at the landscape of masonry. The world out there around us doesn't define masonry as what your lodge or my lodge is particularly doing at any given moment. And that's what defines us internally. We know what we're doing and not doing. We know if we're in an area where charitable acts is a struggle. We know we're in an area where our charity to our fellow man is something spiritual. We know we're in an area where such acts are handled as a PR exercise. How sad is that? But it happens. We should be able to talk a little bit tonight about defining where we're going, what direction we're heading in, and be able to dip into that reservoir and enjoy and savor the moment. And I think that we deserve, and I think we can, find great balance in masonry. And if you're striving toward insight, it's not going to happen. Oh, listen to me. It's not likely to happen unless we look at things in a that help us to truly begin to understand the fabric of the universe around us and our role in it. Now, don't think this isn't daunting. This is a thinking man's adventure, a thinking man's experiment. But to put it into context today, we're being right on the verge of a national holiday. And it makes us think about things in a slightly different way. When we're thinking about our nation, we can celebrate the greatness. This isn't defined by a loose tongue or some poor ideas. It's not defined by our politicians. They're defined by the people, who we are and what we are. And the choices that we make, we feel deep responsibility. Now, put this into context. let's be generous with ourselves. Let's be patient with ourselves. We can't do that unless we have some reasons. You know, just it's a simple platitude. Oh, I'll be patient. Canada, the younger child, the larger child, the child of presence. We will never have a Parthenon or Colosseum. We will never have the canals of Venice. We're never going to have the landscape of York or the Lake Region or the Champs-Élysées. The Louvre and the Hermitage will continue to stimulate the imagination, and knowledge will double and redouble at shorter intervals. At the face of change, certain consistencies and questions are rooted in time. They're fueled by time. They will continue to reflect the essence of human existence, where understanding feeds our curiosity, even in the primacy of a nation, Canada. Masonry has begun to be defined. Our maritime shores is where the power of three oceans is daunting. Prairie sky is a map of the cosmos. Rocky Mountains are our cathedrals, where the awe of creation is altering. Forests are the classrooms of our two solitudes. And this became a new glaze on the surface of masonry. You do things a little different here. Not solely to be different, but because it is different here. The writings and notes sent back to their families by the early explorers talk about this. It wasn't always comfortable to go from, you know, advanced cultures to a woodland, but the appeal of the land has been inalterable. It changed the way we perform and express, the way we express masonry. Even at the start, we were left to our own devices. It's not enough to think that there were certain boys that came over here, certain officers that came over here who had been initiated in their home countries. That's not enough. That's a touchstone in the stream. Mm-hmm. But it's not enough to explain what's happened. We are of significant nations. Three. We came, the early exploration, for European exploration, came to a land that had already been explored, where there were nations functioning with very powerful claims and internal politics. We know these things to be a fact. The two major, maybe we could say if we want to include the Spaniards, third, France and England exploited the resources of the area to feed their European markets. Imperialism was at its height. If we're thinking about the United Kingdom, this is an area that at different points in history exhibited the most class stratified society. There was a great deal of snobbery that influenced how history evolved. Even the history of religion, the being anything but Church of England was considered to be more common, wasn't it? Yes. And so to belong to that privileged notion, it was important to be defined in every aspect of life. And then along came this interesting group of people that referred to themselves as Puritan. Let's go back to you know, let's go back to our roots and let's cut away the trappings of this contemporary setting, this opulence, the where the distinction between men is heightened, so that we find the oneness among us. And let's do that by all dressing similarly. We see pictures in the art world of this severe black and white, the black suit, the black hat, and the black dresses, and the white collar and cuffs. And let's leave, because we're being exploited. Where do we go? Well, do we head that group headed off to they were finding that the Church of England is a little too Catholic, not big C but small C Catholic, and we know the parallels between Catholicism and Church of England, the ritual. It's quite remarkable and interesting experience. But that group headed off not to America first, but to Holland. And it was there for about 12 years, Protestant Holland. They thought they would find some place where they could put down roots and be allowed to practice their faith unencumbered, uninfluenced. But then European chemistry changed, and there was a threat of Protestant Holland being taken over by Catholic influences, and that created complications. So, taking a ship, they headed off to America, but the first ship sprang a leak. They had to set into port in England, South England, into, of course, Plymouth, where they reboarded, found a new boat, the Mayflower, reboarded and headed off to England. Now, or headed off to America. Now, not to think that this is the bee's knees. History has distorted quite a bit. It has been distorted quite a bit about the early pilgrims, the Puritans, right? They were a severe lot. This was, we will know the taste of severity, because in some religions and faiths around the world, we're seeing that severe translation being played out in atrocities. I'm not claiming that these were necessarily atrocities, but there was an expectation, a cultural expectation, and they needed a new land where they could set up and live a culture, a different society, according to principles that they saw in a particular way. Nothing wrong with that, you say? Of course not. But even within that, there are, you know, their need for checks and balances was apparent. Religious law, canonical law, and civil law didn't live side by side. The United States and the rest of Canada became a nation of laws, of democracy. As loose and as frayed at the cuffs as that is, it's nevertheless a fact. You know, did those? Think about this. This is a group of people that were severe in their devotion. So they decided they might want to just ban Christmas. I can give you the years if we need to talk about the years, but just the idea that over, as they put down roots and started to look around at the expression of piety, they had their own ideas. As you say, nothing unique in that, is there? But it tells us that this was a land of, truly, the land where that appealed to opportunists of all stripes. Could you make your way in life? Well, for the third son of a lot of families in the UK, it was the alternative. The first son was generally directed to a military career. The second son, generally directed toward a career in the clergy. And the third son, well, that wasn't quite defined. So we inherited the careers of a lot of those people that were drifting. And when they came here, they found that they could be who they are, be who they were. They had opportunity here that wasn't available to them in other places. Now, interesting parallel. We read about the events in the history of Masonry, and if you put blinkers on, you would think that all Masonry is defined culturally by other cultures. But which one? Do we define it by, do we rely on the Dutch? They contributed the notion of constitution, the legitimacy of Masonry in the, 16th century? Was it 15th? The major contributions of around the world, is it this, the form in the Nordic states, or is that the form of a Protestant ethic that that became rooted in Masonry in that area? Was it the cultural, the character and nature of Scotland, the historic separation of Highland and Lowland Scotland, Scotland and England? Is that where Masonry was truly formed? It was influenced, and it stands in as part of the historic reality. Or was it in the organization within of Grand Lodge in England, the reconciliation of the ancients and moderns? Which part? Altogether, this is an interesting table that we set for ourselves with these very enriched tastes. There is no line drawn in the sand. What we see is the evolution of the craft, always at the face of change. The interesting, what it feeds on at that fissure, is optimism, is audacity, the ability to be thoughtful and reasonable where other people aren't, where we can see connections with people where other people can't. That's what distinguishes the order. Apart from other social organizations. Now, this 6th day of September 2016 will pass into history. The events and activities, the primacy of Freemasonry that's happening today, the displays will change. Some of them will last longer than others, but they probably won't all last forever, if we're thinking about that. Just like you and I, just like our nations, just like the trees, just like things around us are constantly in a state of flux and change. What we give is this illusion of permanence and predictability, what we generate, and there's some comfort for ourselves and the people around us. But so the greatest comfort that we receive is being able to influence the well-being of people around us, and that for us is moving away, is resolving conflict, is understanding conflict, is understanding consternation, is understanding ignorance. We replace ignorance with understanding. Well, even if one of us takes on that task, which many of us have, we hear it. It doesn't mean that it happens because we hear it. It's the process. It's the lifestyle where there's a state of becoming. So in that light, Masonry is the act of becoming. You and I are becoming something that we weren't before. More thoughtful, more reasonable, more aware, more accepting. Something that we weren't before, and in a way that we don't draw attention. This is a part I think that a lot of the Masons today, the contemporary Mason, is starting to find quite intriguing, that notion of the aesthetic, the Mason that is practicing his work, and in that constant state, and to achieve those states of constancy. And in the meantime, we accept him. We know that he's a work in progress. So, is this about attending only things Masonic? Well, let's unravel that just for a second. If we did that, would it be like, if we look at this environmentally, what is it that helps Masonry to thrive, to exist, and to continue to exist? What feeds it? Well, we know that part of what feeds it is the mind of a man, the curiosity and nature of man to explain, to understand the unknown. Is that quantified? Is that quantifiable? Well, I don't know how to really talk to you about that. It exists. It's sort of an existential kind of a question. It exists in the mind of one, therefore it exists. Descartes aside, it becomes an interesting thought experiment. But we'll not get into that today. What else makes it thrive is the dialogue, the social connections of one human being with others, that need for association. It's an interesting way of describing what kind of creatures we are, because, you know, we need to be around each other, but our growth often happens in terms of contemplation. Now, Masonry has become, in some areas, has strayed away from that because a lot of men haven't had that experience. And there's an awkwardness about creating these environments of contemplation. It's stilted. It's very, very self-conscious. So a lot of folks find that so discomforting. And this is where we begin to fall over our own boots in a bit. Once upon a time, we would have been clearly and socially stratified by the community and the society around us. Here, there's an illusion that there is opportunity for all. That's a nice illusion, but it's not a fact. There are certain disadvantages that some people experience that limit their ability to progress. No matter the arrogance of the statement in itself, everybody can do everything, everything and achieve. Well, don't you wish that was a fact? Certainly I do. But in the meantime, we have a nation that we're within Masonry, not a nation, an order, where we want to, we find that we are defining our own limits, that though we're reading from the scripture of Masonry, the orthodoxy of Masonry, that sets us out to explore the arts and sciences. How far we go and where we look depends on our backgrounds and our education and our appreciation of self-improvement. Now, does that mean the classics? Well, depends on the mind of the individual. Some people it would immediately lead to realizing that they have questions. They don't really understand art from what that does, or we don't understand much about the development of science or religion. And so we begin that process of education, reading, opening our mind. The masonry gives us those urges, don't they? Those prompts. And they become, they have to exist, not in a totalitarian way, where everybody is a clone of everybody else. I think that would be most unpleasant. Most unpleasant. I always I'm curious about the uniform. Uniform takes away the individual, mm-hmm. or uniform. A uniform means that what you emphasize isn't about the external, but what you begin to emphasize. What you begin to develop is the internal man. So again, you and I wear a uniform, more or less the same in different Masonic locations across the country. But there are identifiers, little prompts, little icons that tell us volumes about the person before the conversation takes place. Masonry is young here. We're learning. We're being well-schooled. There's been an explosion of curiosity, and no longer is it considered unnecessary. It's considered essential. It's now become the food, the intellectual food that is enabling us to thrive. We are in exciting times here in Ontario. We need to give a nod, an acknowledgement to the people that risk criticism by standing for political elected office. But they give us the framework for us to proceed, to complain about them and find all kinds of faults, like we do with any elected official. That doesn't change. That's the nature of us, not necessarily the nature of the elected person. But we are new at defining, at looking in the mirror and then describing what it is we see. So far, we've not felt we've had the bearing to look deeply into that. We can look at it superficially. That's where we look at the numbers. Oh my goodness, and that's where this really, it's remarkable that our presence is defined along that one strata. And I think we can understand that if you sell a million cars. And once upon a time, and today you're selling 100,000 cars. What's happened? Well, the question is: Do we need to continue to sell, to purchase a million cars? What has a million cars done to our environment? What effect have they had? Well, you know, obviously they're a form of transportation. And a conspicuous display for some, you know, you have to have the fat tires or the thin tires or the chrome work or the logo on the front, even though the engineering might be a piece of, you know, wizardry inside. So think of this environmentally when we think of the Masonic order. What is it that we need in order to exist that nurtures us? We need the mind. One mind. Now, we can tap into that mind, that collective consciousness. I think that that's an important part of Freemasonry that has existed, this notion of the collective consciousness is that we have a shared sense, we have a set of shared beliefs and ideas and moral attitudes which operate as a unifying force within within the larger society. Now, I began to be introduced to the works back when I was a student in the 70s of the French sociologist Neil Durkheim. And it's kind of uncanny that I mention him on this eve of Labor Day, because his most famous work is The Division of Labor in Society. He wrote that in 1893. So the collective consciousness, that we began to explore that in the 50s and 60s. Some psychologists, Jung, the student of Freud, began to talk about this notion of collective consciousness and whether we can, it continues on through time. There are some scientists that believe that as a group we have a shared mind or a hive mind. And they began to suggest, scientists began to suggest this collective consciousness could be developed and spread through species, not explicitly, but through telepathic or supernatural means. A little too far-fetched for many, but not so far-fetched that it hasn't helped us to understand it and define, so to define us. Now, we are in some ways tapping into that collective consciousness that defines us. We have, I think, fair to say, we have shared beliefs and shared ideas and moral attitudes, but those aren't held rigidly. They're multidimensional. Each aspect is multidimensional. It's like looking into a diamond and saying only this perspective is where we see deepest into that gemstone. Where else does the diamond reflect internally, reflect the light? Is it only one perspective that allows that? Or does it depend on the perspective of the viewer? So that gives us a rather clear sense that there's more than one way of looking at things, and we need to be prepared to share that, the idea that there are different roads to Rome, as the saying goes. Not everybody thinks the same. Where do we? Where does this take us in the Masonic presence? Well, here in Canada, it's a little different than other places. There, it's different because presume that those other places are older, that they've had advantages and circumstance and situations that have defined. They have a different history, so it defines Masonry similarly but different in those other locations. Here, it's not that we're ponderous, it's that, or indifferent, it's that we've had other priorities that have taken our energy and the talent of our best minds. In part, we still see the struggle of that. The country is so large. Even with modern telecommunications, geography here is daunting. So if you and I want to see our brethren in British Columbia, we drive for a week. A week. And it's not like we're driving from Berlin to Prague or from Prague to Moscow. You know, it's not like that. We can do that in a couple of hours, or a day. This is a week. And even if we fly it, how many hours does it? If we take the train, it's a week, the Canadian. So this country has different cultures inside of it. We have maritime cultures, and we have mountain culture, and we have the prairie, and then we have the industry. We have French. French through Ontario and Quebec, particularly, and the Maritimes, and Manitoba, and Saskatchewan, and northern Alberta. I don't know if their French Métis presence is prevalent in northern British Columbia. I'll make a note to self about that, to ask you. The dynamic nature of masonry is within, in Canada, is found within the change, the growth that's happening around us every single day. We've created new and better opportunities than we had 100 years ago. Our young people have jobs now that we didn't know existed 5 years ago. They didn't exist 5 years ago. We can have careers in communication and public relations and arts and sciences and environment. And it has come about because we've been defining ourselves gradually as part of a global community. Here we have it. Perhaps the nub of the issue is that we are part of a global community, and more prevalent as we understand ourselves to be living as brothers and sisters, as one, floating in the universe. There's not anybody. We hope there's other intelligence out there, but so far we're it. And we know the universe is without bounds, without an edge. Or do we? We know that we need to be able to preserve and to rely on one another. Are we too clever for our own good? Are we going to consume at a ruinous rate? Nope. We now know that some of our things that we did before were creating problems. We didn't deliberately do them. It was by happenstance. When I was a boy, our municipalities would spray used oil along the shoulders of the road and it was a great dust suppressant. Didn't have dust through the summer. But we found out it leached into the groundwater and contained the toxins. Asbestos was a very, very good insulator. And was easy to handle, but it was abundant. We had mines. We had mines in Quebec, so that we could produce this material and refine it here in Canada. And it was being exported around the world until we found that the little particles created disease in the lungs of people that were around and exposed to it. And so we correct. Now we're understanding that the overfishing of the ocean, concept that 100 years ago would have been absolutely unfathomable to most, except the scientific mind that noticed. Now we're doing something about it to preserve. Now we're preserving monocultures. We can cut down and deforest the mountain, but is it enough for you and I to reforest it with one type of tree? Well, you and I now are saying, great that we have new trees growing great that we've stopped clear cutting for the most part. It still goes on in this country, but for the most part, it's a sin. It's a crime against the environment. It's ruinous. It causes a lot of waste. Realizing that came from understanding that this is a problem and we needed to do better. As we begin to discover When you define a problem is when you define something is when we can begin to study it. So it's not a matter of hesitance. It's a matter of finding the language to use that's not critical but descriptive. No organization is above accountability. Here we embrace the notion of mutual accountability, and the entered apprentice being so significant to our order, the innocence. When we have a moment to reflect, often our toils remind us that we have goals still to achieve, but it's important, it's equally important that we put that idea into the greater context. There is much happening. This will evolve over a longer period of time than one person's life. So we begin things in our notion. We pick up what has been handed to us by the men who went before us, and we pass it on to the men who come after us. What they do with it, we trust will be in the best interest of the craft and the best interest of those individuals, just as we've been trusted with these beliefs and ideas. Freemasonry, like anything else, has a literacy, and now we've realized that there's so much more to know. It's not that simple-minded criticism that we don't know what we're doing. It's a little more complicated than that. There is a lot to be learned, and if we're going to learn about masonry, we will turn to the roots of masonry, and that's, again, distance. We have oceans between us and these other sources of Masonic history, but they can teach us about the nature of Freemasonry. That's really quite important. Does that transfer across the oceans? It will in a changed form. Is there one nature of masonry? I don't know if there is. There's so much more to understand for the likes of somebody simple-minded as me. But it's enough to be able to give us a framework in which to work. Have we the gravitas that masonry has in other nations? And how do we achieve that? Is that something that we achieve with deliberation? Or does that come with time? One day we will have the cathedral to masonry. We don't yet. We're not at the point where we can have that conversation. It's like, will we pave the driveway this year, dear, or will we leave it gravel? It's been gravel for 25 years. Do we need to make a change? Well, maybe not. That's enough for now. I hope that you've enjoyed tuning in to Masonic Effects as much as we've enjoyed having you here with us. There's so much to grasp. But remember, Pascal, the author, speculated, Cleopatra's nose, this is interesting, if it had been shorter, he was using a metaphor, of course, the whole face of the world would have been changed. When we focus on turning points in history, we begin to recognize the crucial role of the accidental and the trivial. Yeah, we can be very forthright, the lions of industry, but the historians give us the advantage of understanding that a lot of major decisions that have occurred in the past have been by accident, We know that, and we can trace that in science, can't we? Where there is the intention of developing one compound that led to the understanding and development of other compounds. We have no doubt that personal charm and the vices of Caesar or Queen Elizabeth or Disraeli or Stalin or Kennedy, they shaped events. But we should probably be reluctant to believe that the future will be as full of surprises as the past. Reluctant. We want to think that the past was where all the surprise was. Even the unpredicted sudden collapse of the Soviet Empire has not chastened us, has it? No. And we go on confidently predicting the course of democracy in the world. How did the printing press make a constitution possible? Are we going to one day be defined by a material success? Are we going to build? Are we going to have our shrine? Are we going to have our Taj Mahal? Are we going to have our Grand Lodge, our Algonquin? The fourth kingdom, the machine kingdom, where we live, reveals how popular expectations inherited from the sciences have been frustrated. How can we come to terms with the need for an unnecessary and deepening paradox of science in a time when there's increasing political power for common sense? Think about it. Come back and join me soon. It's been fantastic. I hope you're well. Enjoy the weekend with your friends and family. Make the best of it. See ya. The Sorsky, by the way. Fun. Yes.
Spider brings you the LG G3 with its quick focus camera so you can capture the action as it happens, like the time you were painting a mural and thought it would be really, really...
I know. So good, and then you do that. You take care of yourselves. Bye for now.